We're doing a Kovetz Mamrim Vigot of Rav Elchanan Wasserman. We're up to the concluding paragraph on page Chet. U'me'ikar ha'yishon emunam b'Hashem, and from the first fundamental point of Jewish belief, that the belief or the emunah that Hashem exists, He created the world, yotza toladam mukhachat ha'ikar ha'sheni. The next step is, logic dictates that you understand there is the next principle, Torah min Hashemayim, that there is a God-given Torah. Hashem gave us the Torah, a direction how to live. Ki acharei shetachlit kol hanivraim nasot etzon konam, if the purpose of all creatures is to do the will of the Creator, v'ze pashut ken koch b'sech l'adam liyot yodei adat elyon l'asig ma'o rotzon Hashem itbarach, and obviously, we can't figure him out. How do I know what he wants? Maybe he wants me to rest on Sunday, or Monday, or Wednesday. Shabbos? Why would I rest on Shabbos? V'im lo yodei HaKadosh Baruch Hu ma'o ritzonon, if Hashem doesn't make His will known, nishara b'riya b'li shum tachlit, so then we don't know what our purpose is. Ki ech efshar l'adam nasot ritzoni Hashem itbarach, im lo yodei ma'o ritzonon, how could I know what He wants? If He doesn't, how can I do His will if I don't know it? V'im ken hadvar mukhach b'chach gamur sh'HaKadosh Baruch Hu hodiya, v'gila l'bnei adam ma'o chefzo v'ritzono mehim, so it has to be that He revealed it to us, that in some way He revealed to us what He wants. That's the idea that we have a Torah from heaven. So, first principle, that Hashem exists, He said logic should dictate that. Second principle is, well, that's an outcome, that's an outgrowth. You figure it out. If He exists, then He wants something of us, and then He has to tell us what. And finally, from that I should figure out that there is a coming of the Messiah. Ki acharei she'adanu b'verur gamur, she'kol ha'nimtzaim nivru la'asot etzono yitbarach shemo. If we were created to do His will, v'anu rim b'chol olam yipuch mizeh, and you look around, and you see the exact opposite. Most of the world is not doing His will. Ki chod me'adam shkuyim v'tuim miyam ha'tavot. What are people focused on? Their desires. Look at all of humanity. Look around you. What are people busy with? You hardly see a person who wonders, what does God want of me? That's not what people are talking about. I haven't seen one talk show that says, what does God want of you? Oprah Winfrey, when was the last time she discussed that? What does God want of you? If that were guiding us, then the newscasts should be filled with that. But I haven't seen anyone discuss that. Okay. I see them discussing what new models are coming out in the year 2015. I see them discussing what gifts you should get people. I don't see them discussing that. K'mamar ha'katuv, as the verse says, v'adavar barur shebishvil bnei adam ka'elu lo haya kedai livro shamayim v'aretz. So if humanity is in pursuit of their worldly desires, and that's all life is about, the rat race, so then it's pretty obvious that for that it wasn't worth creating a world. So it seems obvious that we are looking forward to a fulfillment. The world has to evolve forward to a period where Hashem's honor is revealed. Hashem will be king over earth. People will live lives with purpose. It's difficult to look at the world and say, this is the purpose of the world. But so much of the world is missing the purpose. So we anticipate the Mashiach, and he wants to say Mashiach is synonymous with a global recognition of the meaning of life, of leading meaningful lives. And with that, he concludes this letter with Amin v'Amin. And that's a conclusion of this first letter we learned about Emunah. So the prime thought he told us is that Emunah is obvious if we can overcome our desires. That's why philosophers have difficulty with it. That's why the Torah says, "Lotaturu achrei levavchem," because the main obstacle to seeing Hashem in our lives and seeing His desire and connecting with the Torah is our own desires, which stand in the way. It's not in our mind. In our mind we can connect. It's in our hearts. And that's where we discuss the beautiful system that Eish HaTorah has, that sometimes they'll give newcomers a contract to sign. You can only attend classes on condition that for the next month or two, you will not change your lifestyle, you will not keep Shabbat, you will not keep Kashrut. If a person signs on that, then he doesn't feel any pressure. He can analyze things logically because it doesn't force him to do anything. He just promised he won't do anything. So now that I promised I won't change, now let's analyze what does the truth really want of me. Because I said I won't change. So now I can feel more free to analyze what type of person should I be. Yes?
You said how a lot of times your desires get in the way of doing Hashem's desires.
So, of seeing Hashem's desires. Of recognizing them.
So is it wrong to, let's say, like a lot of people, like when I was in college, I would try to convince people to do Jewish things because it's good for them. Like, because their desires really want it, they just don't know it. Is it wrong to start keeping Torah from this mindset? Or is it one of those things like, if it's not, you know, Lishem Shemayim, it'll be Lishem Shemayim?
We generally say mitoch shelo lishma balishma. But I can tell you as an educator that one of the things that I find most difficult is when students come in as clients. Mm-hmm. Meaning, I once taught in a school that was having a diminished enrollment. And I told them I don't want to continue. Because the second the student feels that you need them, you need their enrollment, they're the client, you can't teach them. Because you need them. You're not doing them a favor. You need them. And that's a very... I find it an impossible situation to teach Torah. I think that students will very often enter school as a client. Students will very often enter Judaism with the feeling, I'm doing you a favor. I know you want me to do this, so I'll do you that favor. If we can't evolve from there, I don't know if we can evolve to anything meaningful. So as a starting point, can you invite people for pizza and over pizza discuss philosophy? Yes. But it can only be a starting point. A person will only go so far, because if everything a person does is all self-fulfilling, it's all about me, and that's what we discussed a little bit last time, so then a person ultimately will not be able to see what the Torah wants in them. It cannot be that way. It's one of the greatest hardships of Western education. And I can tell you that it's self-defeating because people lack meaning in the end. When I was teaching elementary school, so you guys want the long version or the short version?
Long version.
Long version? Okay. I liked teaching. And I wasn't sure where I was headed in life. So there was this class that no one wanted to teach, and the school was considering telling them, no educator wants to teach you, you guys are such troublemakers, so go find another school, because no one here wants to teach you. So a parent of one of the kids volunteered to teach part of the day, and I volunteered to teach another part of the day, on the condition that the school will back me whatever I do with the kids. He said, you have to give me an open hand as far as discipline, as far as curriculum. You have to back me. If you'll back me, then I'll take on the class. So I figured I got nothing to lose and everything to gain, right? So at one point, I told the students, I want to take them on Thursday night. There's something called Tomchei Shabbos, where people volunteer and they prepare packages for the poor, and then they deliver them packages, food packages for Shabbat. And part of it is that no one knows who's volunteering and delivering the food, so that the poor are never embarrassed. They don't know who's delivering. And they also set it up so that if you live on the east side of town, you'll be delivering on the west side of town. So you don't know who you're delivering to. And if you live on the west side, you'll deliver on the east side. So this way, no one has to be embarrassed, no one has to know who's getting what, only the heads of the organization really know who's supposed to get, etc. So the first question I got asked is, are they paying us for our time? And I said, no, anyone that wants payment for their time shouldn't come. This is only for people who want to do a mitzvah. People who want to do it for the sake of the mitzvah. You're going to do something to help someone and get zero payback. And no one has to come. It's not on school time. I'm taking from my time to take you guys on a trip, and to participate in doing something very worthwhile. If you want to come, you can come. No one has to come. Not obligatory. You can just show up to Friday morning's class and not come to Thursday night's trip. Whoever wants to can come. So the whole class said they want to come. And I can tell you that I did this more than one year. I'm just giving the example of the harshest year. And every year the students want to do it again and again and again. I had students who did it for years. where I'd come with the next group next year, and students from the previous year were still coming every Thursday night. Because if you can allow a person to connect to true meaning in life, so then a person wants to hold on. This idea that people walk around life feeling like, what's in it for me, is so self-defeating, because in the end, if everything I do is about me, then I'm not so happy about that. That doesn't have real meaning. It has spontaneous short-term pleasure, but long-term meaning, you don't get it out of that. You don't get a feeling of worth out of that. And friends of mine said, you'll never get that class to come. For free? No way. I said, look, if not, not. But if yes, they'll have experienced something which can change their lives. And it did. And again, I saw this year after year. So this idea that Western civilization keeps promoting capitalism in every aspect of life is terrible. I think that when we were children, so they'd ask us to collect tzedakah. They'd give us these boxes where you'd go around collecting charity to help fund day schools in Israel. And what? They still do that, and you get prizes. If you collect $10, you could get a flashlight. You collect $50, you get a walkie-talkie. Collect $100. Now, obviously, the prizes are cost a fraction of the amount of money you collected. But my parents always told us, if you're doing it for the prize, you're not collecting. You want to help people, you could help them, but you're not doing it for the prize. And it was a foreign concept to us, that you're getting a prize for helping someone? Shouldn't you just want to help someone? So I think that that's something which we, as educators, we have to work on. So if you're going to have an event, and that will open people to the idea that this is what Judaism has to offer, great. Many people have never been exposed to it. Many people who have gone to, even if they've had Hebrew day school education, they find they're regurgitating the same thing year after year. They have no concept that Judaism has more to offer. And that's great to expose them to that. But at some point, people have to make the move. They have to say, okay, I'm willing to invest in this. I'm going to do this. You know, psychologists say the same thing, that if you give treatment for free, then the patient gets so much less out of it. If they have to invest, if they have to come out, if they have to make it happen, so then their personal investment makes that's part of the healing process. So in spirituality, it's the same thing. So yes, I think it's fine. Mitoch shelo lishma ba lishma. It's fine if a person starts with the wrong intentions, but they have to get to the point where they're doing it for the right intentions. They have to graduate.
So as a parent, is it a Jewish concept like if you do your homework, I'll whatever give you a zakaniyah?
Okay,
so
Maimonides writes that we all need rewards. Maimonides says we have a very hard time doing things without rewards, and the reward can be a compliment. The reward can be that people praise me, but we all need rewards. So that's true. I specifically think that do your homework and I'll give you a donut is not a good idea. But in general, the idea of rewarding is not a bad one. We just have to think how to help children grow and appreciate that some things have to be done for the sake of the mitzvah. Okay, if we went off on this tangent, I'll tell you one more thing. I'll get to you in a second, Joey.
What did you say? You said you did with the kids on Thursday night?
I took them to volunteer and preparing food packages for the poor.
Oh, okay.
We used to live down the block from here, and where we lived was a steep hill. So I would take my kids up the hill to bring them to their schools, to their daycare centers. And very often I would take the little ones, and the ones who were a little older would start walking up the sidewalk ahead of me. Now here in Israel, so cars park on the sidewalk. That's legally how you're supposed to park. So we had taught our kids that if they see a car on, even if it's not moving, they have to stay far away because the car can't see them through the rearview mirror. Kids are short. So I'm coming out of the house with the two little ones, and the two older ones are walking up the sidewalk. And I look up the sidewalk, and I see a car starting to move. And the two children are standing behind the car, and the car starts moving. And before I can yell, before I can run, and I'm scared that if I'm going to yell, I'm going to distract them, then they might not notice the car. And you know how you're trying to think and run and do everything at the same time. I see the older one take the young one's hand, yank it back, and take a few steps back away from the car. So I ran up to the older one, and I don't remember if it was a boy or a girl, whichever one it was. I hugged them and I kissed them and I told them that kol hakavod, I'm so proud of them that they, when they saw the car moving, they went back with the little one, and I said, I'm running home, I'm bringing them a candy for the way to school. Okay, sounds great, right? I come home and I tell my wife the story. I say, you know, we have to think about it, so we can't let them walk ahead. We hadn't calculated that sometimes cars will be there. And my wife says, you gave them a candy? I said, yeah. So my wife says, you know, and she makes a face. So I asked her, what's wrong? She said, I trained them that it's a given that when they see a car, they move back. If you rewarded that, you made it into something great. If you made it into something great, then it's something that sometimes you do and sometimes you don't do. In their minds, it's a given. You see a car on, you see a car moving, you move back. You stay away from that car. If you reward it, you've changed it. You've diminished it. She's right. I'm saying when we speak about education and rewarding, you have to know that sometimes a reward takes away from the perspective of the child. You've diminished it. You've made it something worth rewarding instead of something that should be a given. And we want people to feel like certain things, things of kindness, of decency, should be a given. It should be obvious we help other people. So that's why I'm saying we have to graduate from that. If we will work with rewards, we do have to graduate on that. Okay.